Betsy DeVos is the next Secretary of Education. The Senate voted earlier this afternoon. It was a tie broken by Vice President Mike Pence, the first time that's happened for a cabinet vote. Let's listen.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the Vice President votes in the affirmative, and the nomination is confirmed.
NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent Ron Elving is here. Ron, Democrats spent all last night on the Senate floor pretty much bashing DeVos's qualifications, hoping to pry away one more Republican vote. They had two to go against DeVos, but this did go as expected.
Yes, indeed. And they never got that third vote that they needed to break the tie in their direction. So a night of sleep lost for no purpose in this particular regard, except, of course, that the Democrats got on the record their opposition to Betsy DeVos, their reasons for it, and perhaps the intensity of it that should register with groups that the Democrats care a great deal about with respect to public education, teachers' unions, and lots of other people who care about schools.
Well, what happens now? In her hearings, DeVos did not know basic education information, like the difference between academic growth and proficiency. Very, very simply put, one has to do with individual growth. One's about taking tests. She made other statements that, you know, were pilloried on comedy shows. But what happens now when she is the Secretary of Education?
She will have all the powers that any Secretary of Education has had. That is, generally speaking, not one of the inner circle of cabinet jobs, not one of the jobs that people care the most about. She may recede from public notice for some while, but there will be controversies. There will be actions by her department that she'll be called for account on, and there will probably be a fair amount of controversy at some point or another as the budget for the Department of Education goes forward.
Right, and as there might be a further debate over you know, what kind of schools that we have. But meantime, what comes next for nominations for President Trump's cabinet? Where are we?
Even now, the Senate is debating the nomination of Jeff Sessions, one of their own number, to be the Attorney General. And in fact, that nomination might have been handled last week, but they had to keep Jeff Sessions in the Senate long enough to provide the 50th vote to make the tie for Betsy DeVos. So they had to put off actually having the vote on confirming him. Now they're having the last 30 hours of debate. Sometime tomorrow night or possibly on Thursday, we'll see Jeff Sessions confirmed. We don't see Republican votes going against him, so we don't expect another tie. We'll actually turn from there to Tom Price for Health and Human Services. That's where the battle over Obamacare is taking place. And then finally, Steven Mnuchin for Treasury. They have both been held up, and the Democrats have been slow-walking those and raising issues about them. But it's possible the Senate will stay in for the weekend to finish them up.
Okay, and that was what I was going to ask. The Democrats are slow-walking. I mean, Republicans claim that, but how does this compare to other transfers?
It's been a relatively slow process, and that is due to several factors, including the Office of Government Ethics, which was not willing to sign off on many of these nominees because they had not done the paperwork that needed to be done for them to get that imprimatur from that office.
Yeah. Other big story this week, the ongoing legal battle over President Trump's travel bans. Oral arguments are set for 6 p.m. in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. What happens there and afterwards?
30 minutes for each side, that is the opponents of the ban, and then on the other side, the U.S. Justice Department arguing for the president's ban. 30 minutes for each side, and by the way, that should be live streamed tonight, so there are different places where people may actually hear those oral arguments being made in real time, and as opposed to waiting for the tape as we do with the Supreme Court. So that could be interesting for a lot of people who are following this intensely. And then after that, the three members of this emergency panel from the West Coast Circuit Court of Appeals are going to huddle and come up with some sort of a decision and share that with us. Now, that could happen quickly. They've spent the day today reviewing briefs. They're going to hear these oral arguments. It might not take them long to make up their minds, so we're all going to be paying close attention to that tonight, and then if we don't hear tonight, into tomorrow.
And Ron, why don't you take on, would love your opinion on President Trump falsely claiming that journalists have been reluctant to report terror attacks around the world. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan was asked about this at a news conference today.
I can't speak to whether or not you're over or under reporting something. That's your job. I'll stick with doing mine.
Seeming to want to get as far away from that as possible. Look, the Washington Post is reporting that the White House might have been influenced by lists compiled by Alex Jones' right-wing website InfoWars, lists of terror attacks that have not been covered. But it's demonstrably not true. Why would the White House say this?
The White House seems to be eager to stay in close touch with Alex Jones's constituency, people who are willing to believe, for example, that the 9/11 attacks were some sort of a setup job or a false flag operation, who believe that the attacks on some of the schools and the gun attacks that have killed children never happened or were set up and falsely reported. The White House seems to want to stay in touch with that constituency, and I think that's where this kind of impulse comes from. But it's really hard to imagine that CNN would not cover a missing jet airliner after everything we've seen of their interest in such issues, or that CNN would not cover a terrorist incident, or that USA would not cover a terrorist incident. Some of the ones on this list have had less coverage because they were perhaps a knife slashing in Melbourne, Australia is number one on the list. Anything that was not fatal, anything that did not involve guns, anything that did not involve explosions would get less treatment, of course, than some of the classic, most tragic of the terror attacks of the last 20 years.
Well, it's also been pointed out that attacks by whites on blacks, for instance, in the U.S., were not on the list.
And also the attack in Quebec just this past week or so that killed five Muslims at prayer in a mosque, that also was not on the list.
NPR Senior Washington Editor and Correspondent Ron Elving, thank you as always.
Thank you, Robin.